Cape Talk, Car Talk.
Well, fitting to start Car Talk with a comment from Tess in Parow responding to the conversation around deaths on the roads. Tess saying, we're quick to judge the taxi industry and we think of accidents on long trips, but it begins with us stopping at red robots and stop streets. And I want to give Tess in Parow a round of applause if we can find the sound effect to go with it, because here is all I can say, Tess. Yes, there are other factors that play into the road death tally, but every single one of us has got to look at our own personal responsibility behind the wheel. And I'm so with you on this, that it starts with all the corners that we cut, and we know we do it, and then we're very quick to turn around and blame those who drive drunk or who behave badly behind the wheel of the taxi and not acknowledge the fact that maybe we are also part of the problem. So I really endorse what you've said, Tess. Thank you for your WhatsApp. This is the time to phone in with your motoring questions for Chira de Siena of cars.co.za. He's standing by to tackle those questions. Chira, always great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks so much.
And before we get to any of those calls, we have a second guest joining us for the car show today, because Chira pointed out to us that there's a draft code of conduct out for the automotive industry released by the Competition Commission in September already, and in fact, very close to finalisation. On the line with me is Les McMaster, the director of the Right to Repair campaign. Les, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I propose nice to be here.
Won't you sketch for the audience who might not have heard about this code of conduct why there was a need for such a document? What are the issues it's intended to tackle?
Okay, so the key issues are very far-reaching and very wide. But in a nutshell, it's the conduct of the OEMs towards the aftermarket, the independent aftermarket workshops, where they are on an ongoing basis and increasingly are excluding aftermarket workshops from actually doing repairs to late model vehicles. And in this sense, I wanted to stress that there's a tendency, an ever-increasing tendency, to code parts where the aftermarket workshop don't have access to the codes, increasingly build in codes in a larger and an ever-increasing range of the parts that are fit to vehicles, and the aftermarket workshops are being excluded from fitting those parts, coding them, and working on those vehicles.
Les, if I understood, we're struggling a little bit to hear with a rather bad quality phone line. So if you don't mind, I'm going to put you back on hold and ask my producer to see if you can move around a little bit and perhaps find a clearer corner where we can chat to you from. Chira, let me bring you in here in the meantime while we try and get a clearer line to Les. He's talking about independent aftermarket workshop. We're talking here about small independent service providers who aren't affiliated with a particular dealership, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yes, correct. So at the moment, the general trend in the industry, and very happy for Les to correct me if I don't want to speak out of turn yet, but essentially what usually happens is you buy a car and you get a service plan and you get a warranty. Now, usually what happens is the service plan runs out before the warranty. So there's that sort of gap there where the manufacturers have basically locked the consumer into a deal where they have to service in a dealer, in a dealer franchise. Otherwise, the warranty is void. And I think that's one of the key issues that Les and the Right to Repair are campaigning against.
Okay, because obviously we know that it's an expensive process having the car serviced at the dealer workshop. I think we've got Les back on the line. I'm hoping it's going to be a slightly clearer line, Les. Sorry about that.
I hope it's a better one this time.
That's much, much better. Thank you. Okay, great. So between you and Chira, I think we've got a sense that we're talking about here about the little guys, the independent people who are able to work on your cars perfectly competently, but are being locked out of doing so because of the service plan and warranty that customers are locked into when they buy the car at the dealer. So what does this code of conduct set out to do to fix that issue?
Well, in a nutshell, it's to level the playing field. We drawn up a list of wants, and that is taken from the European and the American right repair legislation that we would like to have implemented in South Africa, so that the independent, small independent aftermarket workshop has equal access to tooling, data, and repair procedures like the OEM workshops we have.
Okay. And obviously, if that is possible, it means that there's more options for consumers to choose where they take their vehicles. There's more opportunities, I assume, for people to open up their own small businesses and hopefully expand the reach and also bring down pricing.
Well, we have a looming disaster coming. If you think of in the last 5 years and maybe a bit longer, we've had the vehicles being having coded parts, and the aftermarket have done have access to those codes. And if you think of certain parts in that car that are absolutely rely on being coded into that vehicle, we have a situation where the OEMs have now built in codes into brake parts. They've built codes into gearbox parts. They've built codes into quite a large number of parts where we don't have access to. And the consumer is now being forced to take that vehicle to a franchise dealer who is going to charge him probably two-thirds more than what he would at an independent workshop. But because they don't, if you think of a consumer buying a second, third, or fourth-hand car, the guy down the third and the fourth hand doesn't have the money to replace parts that are coded. So what they do is, and I'm going to give you a practical example, an ABS braking system, where the braking system has a brake system unit that, in emergency situations, allows that vehicle to be stopped safely by pulsing the brake system. Those parts are now coded. Apart from that, a brake system, a typical coded part like that would cost almost two-thirds of the price of the value of the car. So you can think what happens. So that thing packs up. They don't have the money to replace it. So what they do, they start bypassing them, and they make that system into a normal braking system, as we would have had in all the older cars from way back. But that car was designed to have an anti-lock braking system. But now the guy is driving around with a vehicle that has a bypassed system, and he's on the roads traveling at 120 kilometers per hour. Yeah. When there's an emergency situation, there's no way on this earth that that car would stop in the distances that in his mind perceives that it would. We also have airbags that are being bypassed because of the price of airbags, and airbags coded, where the aftermarket don't have access to coding of those airbags. So when there is a minor an accident and the airbags have been deployed, they, what they do is they put them, fold them back into their places where they jumped out of, and they bypass the system with a small resistor, which makes the owner of the vehicle think that there's an airbag fitted. But that airbag will never deploy in an emergency situation.
Sure.
These are all things that we are looking at, and we're saying this is not the way it should be done. We should have access to the codes so we can work on those systems, code them correctly, and the price of those parts should be available. The part should be available to the aftermarket at the aftermarket prices, not at the dealership prices.
Les, if I can play devil's advocate here, I'm sure the dealers are going to try and argue, the motor manufacturers are going to say, we put all the money into the research and development of new technology, etc. Why should we pass that on, knowing that you'll take your vehicle somewhere else to have it fixed?
Okay, so once the vehicle is out of warranty and out of motor plan and all that is now bypassed, those vehicles now come into the mainstream aftermarket space. And this is where those vehicles are typically being worked on. Now, the dealers and the OEMs know, not the dealers, I'd rather put the OEMs into this basket. The OEMs know that for their dealerships to survive, they need an ever-increasing number of vehicles going through their workshops because, obviously, they have a workshop, they've staffed it, and they need to be a cost center on its own. But what they do is, with these vehicle parts that have been coded ever increasingly, the idea is that they want to get those vehicles back into their workshop.
Mm.
But we know from history that once a vehicle has lived out its motor plan and its warranty, it comes into the aftermarket space as a matter of course. And this is where we run the risk of these vehicles being bypassed, all kinds of systems being tampered with, making these vehicles mostly
unsafe.
unsafe on the roads.
Okay. Liz, I mean, I said that the Competition Commission put out the draft code of conduct in September already. It's now really close to being finalized. From here?
Okay, so we await all the comments, the draft, and the public comment to the draft, and that will be collated and will be released in another week's time or so, if my memory serves me correct. And then we take it from there. The idea was that we approached the OEMs and we said, you know, this is what's happening. Come to the table, let's have talks. There were a couple of OEMs that did it, and some were very positive, and others, they just ignored us. They wouldn't address us. So this code has now forced them. You know, now they have to come and sit and talk because it's going to be a voluntary code. And there will always be that grey area that everybody's going to want to be part of on their side, and that we can draw a line through and meet each other halfway. But the code has actually forced that now. So that they know our demands, they know what we want, and it's for them to come to the party and say, right, this is what we want.
Les McMaster, thanks for chatting to us today, director of the Right to Repair campaign, and no doubt we'll touch base with you again, Les, once we have sight of that next phase in a week or so's time. Thanks for joining us today. Chiro, thanks for tipping us off about an interesting story and one that obviously has wide-ranging, long-ranging implications for motorists.
Yeah, today was definitely a school day for me as well. A lot of the technical aspects that Les went into there I actually wasn't aware of. I think the entire issue can be summarized in the sense that, the payoff, the takeaway for the average consumer is that servicing and looking after your car, especially out of warranty, can and should be cheaper. And I think that's what this code of conduct is aiming towards. So from it, there are obviously technical aspects, but I think that's the higher level objective.
Okay, Chiro, thanks for that additional feedback. We're standing by to take your calls for Chiro on 021-446-0567. You can also send an SMS to 31567, as someone has already done, asking simply, are there any single cab automatic buckies available?
Yes, the Ford Everest, the Ranger in the 2.2 has an auto, and I think the Amarok had one. I think they might have discontinued it. But the Ranger should have a single cab auto.
Okay, thanks very much for that SMS. Thank you to Linda. She sent an email last week giving some feedback on a question that came up a week or two ago. And we didn't have time for it last week. I'm going to squeeze it in now. It was a week or two ago, Chiro, that someone phoned in asking for advice for his son, who has to commute to and from town but spends a lot of time surfing up the West Coast. And we were talking about the best kind of car for him to consider that would take the surfboard. And Linda mailed me after the show to say we had the same requirements for our son, a small budget, but needed to be able to accommodate at the surfboard. And Linda's feedback was that the VW Caddy has proved to be the perfect car. Surfboards hang from the top and out of sight. He built a platform level with the back seats that, when folded down, gives ample sleeping room for him and his mate, and his stuff is all stored below it. The sliding door is great. It allows for a perfect seat for sitting when kitting up in a wetsuit, and it all round has been the perfect surfing car. So Linda, thank you for that feedback, and I hope the person who asked the question originally is listening again today and can factor that into their decision for their son and his surfing trips. The VW Caddy gets a big thumbs up from Linda. Right, a question from Brian in Cormackie, or rather it's a comment from Brian in Cormackie listening to that interview about the code of conduct. And his comment is as follows. How do they expect to be able to fix newer cars when they can't even fix a 10-year-old Honda Ballard? I have no faith in their abilities anymore. I've spent 58,000 Rand having my Honda fixed mechanically, and it is still not perfect. And that is just this year. Oh dear, oh dear, Brian. Chiro, any suggestions for Brian when he's just getting no love?
It's a tough one, isn't it? And I think that in the space, if you are running an older car, maintaining an older car, you can go through some really difficult teething issues, and you can spend a lot of money on mechanics who just can't get the job done. And I suppose there's potentially somebody who can come into the space to almost rate the services of these mechanics in a way that we can sort of separate the cream from everything else. It's a really difficult one. In the past, when I was running an older car, I took it to two guys. I wasn't too happy with the service. The third guy turned out to be sent from heaven, and he really got the car running perfectly for me. So it's unfortunately a tricky one. There's no silver bullets when it comes to that. But if you found a good mechanic, look after him. He'll look after you. And of course, spread the word, and hopefully we can really get to the a list up of who these guys are, who the dependable guys are.
Thanks for the advice. 021-446-0567 is the number to dial. You can also leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Lucy has a nearly 10-year-old Subaru Forester that she's clearly very fond of. Chiro, it even has a name, our Scooby. We love our Scooby, says Lucy, but at what point do you make the call to get a new car? She is a beaut, but we worry about the cost of investing in an old car versus biting the bullet and buying a new one. What's your advice?
Always a tricky one. There's a certain amount of crystal ball gazing that has to go into these sorts of decisions, because cars are unique in their ability to be temperamental, to have no problems one day and many problems the next. So it is very difficult to predict. I think if a car is starting to give you consistent issues, it's probably time to let go and to move on. However, certain cars for me, certain brands that I know of and that research has shown do last a really long time. I don't know if you remember, Pippa, I think last year we covered a story where there was a survey done in America of people who keep their cars for 10 years or longer. And the number one car on that survey was the Forester.
Mm-hmm.
So it's potentially a car that can be kept for a really, really long time. I think what I would do is chat to people who know the car. So I always, the guys at Subaru Cape Town in Culemborg, I've had really good dealings with them. The dealer principal there, his name is Tini Bester. He's super, super helpful. I would just go around for a chat and just see, what's it going to be like to maintain this car going forward.
Okay, thanks for the advice. Speaking of cars that have done a long trip and a lot of mileage, we always get, I think almost daily, receive a question about what's happened to Julia in her Toyota Conquest. For those who've been following the story of 80-year-old Julia Albu, who was taking her 20-year-old Toyota Conquest on a road trip up through Africa, I just want to remind you, I know John has done so as well, but the website, if you'd like to follow that trip, is myafricanconquest.com for more on Julia's story, myafricanconquest.com. A question from Linda as well, saying we would like a recommendation on a small automatic car for our daughter, a good priced secondhand one. Yes, I know she should be in a manual, it says, but sometimes life doesn't work like that. Looking for a starter car, a small automatic. What would your advice be?
I think the Toyota Yaris represents quite good value. The previous generation, which I thought was actually quite a strong product, didn't sell particularly well, and I think their values reflect that, their secondhand values. So might not come in at the particularly favorable price point. I think, did she say 80,000?
She didn't actually say that there was no price range.
Okay. So I think you're probably looking around 120 for a good Yaris. I think I'd also be happy if my first car was an Opel Corsa as well. If memory serves, there is an automatic option there. I definitely have a look at that. And another car that I do think of a previous generation would serve a young driver very, very well is the previous generation Mazda 2. There was an auto there as well. I think there was, I preferred the 1.4 engine if I was looking for a petrol auto.
Okay. One final question on the SMS line. It's a choice, a simple choice, VW Kombi or Hyundai H1. What would be your choice?
the H1 is probably the more of the workhorse variety, whereas the Kombi is a little bit more luxurious in its execution. So it depends on what you're looking for. If you maybe have a client-facing business, they might appreciate the Kombi a little bit more. But I think if I was looking for something that's going to live a hard life and do a lot of kilometers, I think I'd go for the Hyundai.
That's where we'll wrap for today. Chiro de Siena of cars.co.za. Always great to have you with us. We'll chat again next week.
Thanks so much.
Have a great week, Chiro. Remember, you can send your questions to me in advance of the motoring segment, an email to pippah@capetalk.co.za.